Podcasting 2.0 for October 1st, 2021, episode 56. Is that a rocket in your pocket? Now, we're just happy to see all of you. You know it. Time once again for a board meeting, Podcasting 2.0. Everything going on at podcastindex.org. All the gossip at podcastindex.social. And it's also creative. And of course, we got the namespace. It's all here. You're all welcome. The coffee is warm. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of Hill Country, Texas, and in Alabama, the man who should be fluent in Korean by now, my friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Jones.
Why Korean?
What? Aren't you still exporting a database for Samsung?
Oh, no. That's not for Samsung.
Oh.
No. That was top. That was, that's for top secret, Well, if we were going to do this in indictment parlance, it would be Top Secret Technology Company 4.
Oh, is that NDA speak?
Mm-hmm. That's how you talk when you indict people and then redact everything.
You know? Oh, yes.
Technology Executive 2.
Unindicted co-conspirator, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, totally.
So
what's your sound issue going on?
Like, goodness. Well, I decided,
I walked in and I can noticeably tell that it sounds different.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the problem. You sound kind of boomy, by the way. Did you change something in your,
I don't think so.
No.
Is this any different right here? If I get up real close.
Yeah. Get up close, man.
Is that better?
That sounds much better. Yeah. You gotta fist that thing, man. Fist it.
I'm right up in its grill.
Hell yeah, it's great. Now, so the Tascam Mixcast 4 became available. And I
This is the thing you were thinking about getting.
Yeah, this is exactly the thing I was thinking about getting. So I get the thing I was thinking about getting, and I hook it up, and I'm really jacked. I'm really happy about all this. I'm like, oh, this thing is gonna be great. Well, there's some false advertising or things that were advertised as features that I thought was exactly what would make it a great thing, a great device to reduce cables and boxes, etc. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you what the problem is. So it's very much like the Rodecaster, with the assignable cart button, so you can put jingles in there. It's got four microphones. The sounds for the microphones and the preamps and all the processing is impressive. Totally cool.
There's no noise at all. I mean, it sounds super clean.
Oh yeah, no, I kind of, you know, the part of my sound is actually for it not to be so super clean, but that's a secondary story. So the way the chain works is, and it also has a Bluetooth input and output. It has a TRRS, or alternatively a line in and a separate line out, and a USB. Okay. So what you always want is each individual channel has to have its own effects, its own compressor limiter and EQ. And then on the total mix, you want to also have a compressor limiter, which is usually subtle, but it's very important because that's really what helps you with the mix. Particularly if you're doing live stuff, you want everything a little bit on autopilot, right? You don't want to be riding the faders the whole time, and that's what a compressor limiter will do. It's like a leveler, in essence. Now, the way I like to configure them, it also kind of affects the sound a little bit, makes it more exciting, and you know, but that's neither here nor there. So I thought that they had that, and they don't. What it says is, you can. There's a limiter for when you record, but that only takes place after the recording. You say, okay, so it records everything without the compressor limiter. And then when it writes it to disk at the very end, the writing to disk, that's the compressor limiter part. So you don't hear that. So that is a violation of the fundamentals that's not in there. that's a huge, huge problem. So that's
because it comes out. So that means it goes out to the live stream that way.
Exactly. Oh. So that actually now when I'm recording, I can pull it through a processor later and get pretty close to what I like. The problem is when you're doing the actual recording, the levels are all over the place. It's distracting. All of a sudden you blow out my ears. Then it's really soft. And a compressor limiter would fix that. So now I have external boxes really just for my headphones, but I'm also recording it on a separate machine on Audacity just to see if how that sounds. I'm also recording on the internal SD card. Problem number two. I was delighted that it had a noise gate on the USB interface because then I can actually bring in my buddy Dave through clean feed, which needs the it needs to talk to USB. But if you want to record from the USB, you're getting the mix minus signal. So if I want to record on Hindenburg, if I want to record on Hindenburg, my favorite editor, it's not going to get that unless you put it into ASIO mode. But then you're forced to record, you know, all the tracks at the same time. You got to go, you know, then I guess you can edit it in that, learn a new editor. You know, so I just want an additional stereo out that is after the final compressor limiter that I can just send to any recorder.
Yeah.
Those two things by itself will be phenomenal. And also there's no granular controls for the USB. There's just nothing, talk, music. So I can't really do too much with your voice. There's some things, but it should just be every channel should be identical. Compressor limiter, noise gate, EQ, that's it. And now I don't know how powerful the processor is in this thing, if they can put it all in there, but man, that would make it perfect because now I have to have a whole, I have a 19-inch rack box outside of this thing with wires hanging off it, the exact opposite of what I wanted.
That's what I had to say. You've made this thing, this is worse now. This is worse than it was.
Because I really love that I only had two cables to connect. You know, I connected the USB and then I connected the laptop's audio out, analog audio out jack to the line in of, so that's how I do all my, my effects and the carts, et cetera. That works really well with just a couple wires, but now I have to have this whole chain out of the back running through the compressor limiter, then into an amplifier. I'm sure you even have noise, you know, like all kinds of noises coming along with this recording. But anyway, something that is cool.
It does have the voice of God built in case I need to summon him.
Holy crap. Jeez. Well, you know, the compressor limiter is not on the live output, but the God voice, because that's so much more important.
So then there's all kinds of nuance, like, you know, the mix minus that I'm sending to you. It also has no compressor limiter. So you're getting levels all over the place. You're not hearing me the way I'm hearing me.
Yeah, you sound much different than what you normally sound like. I mean, like it sounds like it's a very.
It's clean and crisp.
In a disturbing way. Like not in the good way. You know? It's not clean and crisp like an NPR. It's clean and crisp like a like unprocessed.
Really? I wonder if you're getting it before the processing even.
I don't know. I may be because it sounds like there's no noise. I mean, the noise is zero.
Yeah.
But it's almost like it's like you said. I mean, there's no. That I hear it, compared to what you used to be, I think there was a little bit of graininess to the old one.
This is definitely cleaner, no doubt about it. And also, I had a lot of wires connecting to stuff. So then the final thing, and then I'll shut up about it. The built-in recorder is actually quite nice. You know, I just got a 16 gig card in there. It can do 10 hours of recording.
Like one episode of MoFax.
Exactly. It has a mark button, which is easy to access. So if, you know, that's like, oh, that's an edit point, hit the mark button. And I would use that thing exclusively. But believe it or not, when you use the built-in recorder, you can't switch memory banks on the eight buttons that you use for stuff like
boost.
You know, so I've got those all loaded up. And I know why technically, because, you know, it's recording to the SD card. And I don't think you can record to the SD cards and read from them in high speed at the same time. because that's where the cart files are stored. Uh-huh. But it's ridiculous. So, you know, I loaded up eight banks filled with eight different jingles. And I was like, oh, cool. I can switch between them, but you can't, you can only select one. And then you can't move between them once you're recording.
ISO, what do you know?
I'm sorry.
Did you get my clips?
Yeah, I got your clips, of course.
ISO, what do you know?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was like, I only heard what do you know.
What do you know? Yeah. But yeah. What do you know?
Exactly. What do you know?
You learn something new every day. And well, it's, like, how much was this device? It was expensive, right?
$599. But if anyone is listening at Tascam, I'm so happy to help and advise you on how to make this thing kick ass, because it's so close. And Rode won't listen. So don't be like Rode, Tascam.
that's the PR push. Don't be like Rode.
Don't be like Rode.
what is the issue there? Is it a hardware issue? Is that a chip thing, or is that just all software?
You mean with the
limiter on, with the output and
that's all software. If the processor can handle it, it's just software. I mean, I really only need, well, desperately, I need one compressor limiter that I can hear before it goes out of the chain. And then I'd love to have a compressor limiter for the mix minus, and I'd love to have more granular controls for compressor on the USB and, the line input. I mean, it would just be copy paste, in essence, the way I see it in the code. It's like, okay, copy paste. Boom. Now you got that over here. I don't know if, you know, there's a cost. There's a real cost to how much processing is done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, like, I guess all that stuff now is just, even the real time stuff is all software. I mean,
yeah. The big problem is USB. And that's why I'd really love to have a non mix minus USB feed that I can stick back into the computer to record. But man,
is it USB-C?
And USB is so messed up.
It's never worked.
Oh, it's, and you know, don't plug it into a hub, whatever you do.
Oh yeah. I've never even looked for USB-C hubs, mm-mm, but I bet you they're total garbage.
So I spent about an hour and a half last night with Brett Weinstein.
Oh yeah. I put in his Node thing this morning.
Yeah, it's so Brett Weinstein, a whole bunch of people were tweeting him saying, hey, you know, you got to hook up with Adam Curry. And so I followed him and I said, hey, whatever, happy to help. And then he DM'd me and he gave me his number. And so we were texting back and forth and he said, you know, I was talking with Joe Rogan about you and it's really interesting what you're doing. And I said, okay, well, why don't we get you on to Podcasting 2.0 thinking? Maybe I'll start with some simple stuff, you know, show him some chapters, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then he says, look, I got an Umbral node. What? What?
Damn. I mean, like, no baby steps.
You got it. You got Umbral node?
Yeah, he went straight for the jugular.
And so I said, well, okay. And so I'm trying, you know, I wrote down, I sent him to value for value.io, which he had not read by this morning, but anyway, he was able to find his node ID because he'd never used, he had no channels open on his node. So maybe he's only using it for on chain. I'm not sure. Or maybe just thought it was a pretty thing to have in his house.
and they are quite beautiful.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I'm looking through the thread here because it was pretty funny. And by the way, Brett Weinstein is very, very popular podcaster. And
it seems like a nice guy, too. Like, for any time I've ever heard him interviewed, he seems like a genuine person.
Yeah, and he and his wife, Heather, they do the show together. And, you know, they had Dr. McCullough on, and they were talking about ivermectin, and then he got kicked or demonetized, and I think kicked off of YouTube. And, you know, that was a big hit to their income because they already got run out of Northwestern University, if you recall. He was the biology professor who refused to participate.
Is that Northwestern? I thought it was.
No, wait Green. A minute. Now, it was. What was it?
Simon Green?
No, I thought it was Northwestern.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe you're right.
And so, you know, anyway, from the text messages here, by the way, my Umbral server is up and running. Fuck fiat currency and the fractional reserve it wrote in on.
Holy cow.
So I'm like, jeez. Okay, so hey, your Umbra will be good stacking sats every single minute. So anyway, we get it all working. You put the block in. I opened up channels and it all works. And then, you know, so I say this morning, so, okay, so should be working. And this is very interesting. Hold on a second. Okay, I say it's working. So that's excellent. I do see them, but despite knowing what sats are, I don't quite see what is causing them to flow in my direction. Where do you have to stream from that to happen? And where are they coming from?
And new podcastapps.com, baby.
Yeah. So I said, look at value for value. I don't know. And because that just explains simply what is going on. And then I did a screen recording just before we started the show. And he's like, holy crap. I said, yeah, it'll blow your mind. So this is the kind of guy who could really bring in a whole new slew of podcasters and audience. I mean, he has 500,000 Twitter followers, you know, so he's.
Well, you know,
he's got a voice.
It's crazy that he had an Umbral before he ever even knew what the heck he was doing with it. It's like, how do you end up with a device in your house that you're just like, okay, cool.
Well, Umbral does a lot of, you know, it does have other things. I've looked at the Umbral. I tried to install it on a Linux laptop and failed. I think the Docker issue is set up for Raspberry Pi or whatever. So I had to give up on
that. I think
you
can do like own cloud and all that stuff with it too, right?
Yeah, that's what and you know, some more open source-ish home automation.
This brings me to a interesting topic. I was listening to the Mere Mortals podcast. I've been listening to that a lot. It's mm-hmm. That's a great show.
It's a good
People
show.
Should listen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were talking about needing some jingles for their Boostergram segment.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, and then I listened to Podland yesterday, and James was saying that, you know, he's like, oh, we need some jingles. You know, there ought to be like, we should have like a, like a starter, like a jingle Boostergram starter pack that says, like you download the starter pack and you can do your own.
It's a blister pack. You punch it through. It's like, yeah. Let me get this tasty little jingle. Yeah. Okay. So we'd have
go podcasting.
Everybody needs that one. And we got
boost.
We got that one.
Boost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone
Here's
can
your
this.
Cue to boost. You know you want to.
And then everybody's favorite.
And now, as the French say, it is time for Le Boost.
Le Boost.
Merci. Yeah. Merci, Benjamin.
Holy crap. You're going to stop. That's disturbing. You get the Boostergram starter, the Boostergram corner starter pack. You know?
Okay.
And that gives everybody what they need.
We actually have a couple more. We have
Boostergram.
We got
this. Is it. Sat Stream.
Boostergram.
Yeah. They're all good. Okay. Should we put that on the GitHub?
Yeah, it should be a repo.
like
a repo.
Is there an easy way for me to learn how to do the repo? I never got into
no.
it. No. Okay, thank you. Okay, I will zip them up and send them to you, Dave. Repo away.
No, you can do it. GitHub is not famous for being scrutable. So, good luck with that.
Yeah, I was also listening to Podland, and it was. And by the way, I think. Value for value streaming is just taken over the language. Mm. It's like those guys start off with boosting and all kinds of podcasting 2.0 talk. And I'm proud. I'm proud of the propaganda has worked.
The propaganda. The
indoctrination. Yeah. How much have we sent to James combined in the past year? We probably sent hundreds of dollars trying to get his attention.
It works.
Boost.
Yeah, it works. Getting people's attention always works with money.
But they were talking about, the Apple, the new, and it's not called a VPN, whatever it is, cloaking service. I forget what it's called.
Private Relay.
Private Relay. Man, you got to be crazy not to think that that's not going to happen to podcasting. I mean, Apple is at war with any advertising tracking. They're at war with it.
Mm-hmm. It's all across the board.
Yes. I don't see why they would spare podcasting. They clearly put their stake in the subscription model.
Well, now they have a reason not to spare it.
Because exactly.
Now they have their private subscriptions.
Yep.
And then, not only do they have that technology running. They're now starting to pump out stats about how many, how many subscribers they have.
That shows you where they're moving. So don't count on them not locking that out.
Yeah, they private relay everybody else, and they're like, oh, well, we can't make any money. Well, yeah, you can come over here to Apple subscriptions. Now you can make some money over here, and you don't have to worry about it. And we have, guess what we have? Stats.
Yeah. And what we really should figure out, the proper way to do it, value for value, is we should figure out some kind of subscription type system, which may happen with Bolt 12, I guess, where you can have different kinds of invoices.
Well, I want to pitch this to our guest. I want to lay out my idea for my paywall, open source paywall.
Well,
I'm finally going to take the cover off.
Do you already want to bring our guest in, and so we can?
I guess so.
He's not. Do you think he's properly dressed? It's kind of weird. I don't like
it's the hoodie. It's a little improper for us.
Sandals are weird, man. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the board is we're a little more modern than we used to be.
So. All right, let's bring him in right now. Welcome to the roundtable. The founder, CEO, and I think the guy who does pretty much everything at Voltage, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Graham Krizek.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Graham, did I pronounce that correctly, Krizek?
Krizek. Close enough. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to say it. You could say.
Graham, you've been an important part of the Podcasting 2.0 story from the get-go. You were there with your fantastic Voltage service, hosted nodes. Very, very happy with all the service we've been able to get from you. The nodes are solid. The services, I mean, we know in Lightning Land, there's one man who does not sleep, and that's you. I mean, you're always awake. I'm in Amsterdam. Graham's there. Just one message. Do you sleep with your phone just in case Adam has to have some question that will resolve itself otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, it's just for you, man. It's all for Adam. I think I've mentioned it before that when you're in this the revolution that we're in, there's no time for sleep. There's a lot to get done, right?
It's a hell of a lot to get done. Why don't you tell everybody about Voltage, how you started it? Because it seems to me like you're kind of a cloud guy. You come from, and you know, of course, everyone's younger than me, but you're a young guy. And how you got from more the cloud computing side into the lightning cloud, I guess you'd call it cloud computing, but to the lightning side and the podcasting part, and what else drove you to this point?
Yeah, for sure. Really kind of the journey, I think the journey really started for me with Bitcoin. I found Bitcoin in 2012 by hearing about it through like the Silk Road. And really what the fascinated me about that was the entire peer-to-peer aspects of that, and how, you know, as you hear people, you know, selling drugs on the internet or whatever. But
yeah, I was just buying them.
Yeah. Well, it was like, for me, it was like, how is this possible? Like, you know, like this makes no sense. Like, there's got to be someone in the middle that's, you know, just scooping people up off the street as soon as they get it delivered or something. So I started looking into, like, you know, how is this literally, you know, possible? And that's where I really found out about Bitcoin, Tor, PGP encryption, all of this, you know, the technology that was powering that. And I was really just kind of hooked from there of just this really amazing technology that has, you know, just such broad use case that can really change a lot of things for us. But that was when I was in college. I went through college, I graduated and went into software engineering. And that's what I've done through most of my career is software engineer, specifically in a public cloud infrastructure. So I'm very familiar with, you know, clouds and servers and all of those things on the back end. Bitcoin has always been a hobby of mine through that whole process. It's always been something I've looked at, contributed to Bitcoin Core a little bit, always doing, you know, open source projects, things like that. And then summarizing it up to, you know, early beginning of last year, I started looking into what is kind of next for Bitcoin, right? Where are we going to take this thing next? And that was obviously the Lightning Network. And so I started to get more involved in that. And I think that was even before Umbrella or any of these things were around. And I was trying to set up a note at home, and it was like, it was real painful. It was, I could, even as a...
What year was that, Graham?
It would have been end of 2019, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably around end of 2019 when I started looking at this. And yeah, it was like, even as a technical software engineer, it was like getting a note up and running was like, it was difficult. And so that's where I started, you know, I did it in the cloud, spun up a cloud server, got everything up and running. And it was much easier to do there. And that's when I started looking at this idea of like, well, you know, someone's got to be providing this as a service, right? People can't all just be configuring Go applications on Raspberry Pis at home. That was actually the truth is that everyone was doing that. There was no managed service for it. And that's where I kind of had the idea for Voltage, and just kind of worked on the platform myself just as in my free time as a hobby for a little while. And, it just kind of flourished from there where I was just getting feedback on it. A lot of people liked it. And, you know, over time, it kind of turned into a full fledged company. And now we're, you know, doing really cool things like podcasting 2.0.
How many people in the organization, Graham?
We have a total of 10 people now.
Holy moly, really?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've been growing, and we got people all over the world, actually, which is, you know, the other cool thing about, you know, Bitcoin is it unites us, you know, no matter where you're at. So that's been a really cool thing to work with people from all, you know, all walks of life, all over the world.
So how many nodes are you running?
We don't necessarily publicly disclose the number of nodes, but I mean, it's in the thousands.
Okay. Wow. And that's all just from podcasting 2.0, huh?
Well, yeah. you guys are a big influence. We'll say that.
Well, the system is just so rock solid. You know, there's now, of course, you're here because we have an entire wish list of stuff we need immediately.
Yeah. You're going to give me that list on air, right? And I got to promise everything.
Pretty much.
Well, that's how this goes.
Yeah. What's your problem? Yeah. You're in the boardroom, man. This is how it works.
I don't think people understand probably what you had to do to get these Voltage, to get these LND nodes, Lightning nodes running. Mm-hmm. In a cloud environment in a safe way, because when you mm-hmm. first think of that, you're like, okay, we're going to spin up a whole bunch of cloud copies of LND. What could possibly go wrong? You know, mm-hmm. and that the first thing you think of is, I mean, gosh, this is just like prime hacking territory. So y'all have done a, mm-hmm. I think if I understand right, you've done some hardening on LND itself, and mm-hmm. you sort of have a wrapper around LND so that you can do IP whitelisting. And can you kind of like give a thumbnail sketch of what y'all have done to make that safe?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right that that's something that when I was designing the platform, I didn't want to do was just kind of throw up LND into the cloud and, you know, have it run like it does at home, because that's the threat models of those two areas are very, very different. And so as I was developing the platform, I worked a lot on LND internally to submit some PRs in to do more encryption on like the Tor private keys, the TLS private keys, anything that was essentially private or is sensitive was encrypted to, you know, the wallet seed. So there's nothing on disk. There was also a PR in LND called stateless init. I won't get into like the nitty gritty details of that, but it essentially mm-hmm. allows you to, you know, return all of the credentials in the initialization request instead of writing them to disk, which was done previously. So given all of these things that we've done with the nodes, there's nothing that is like sitting on disk that's unencrypted or that, you know, we could see. The nodes that we run, we can't see inside of them. We can't see your channels, your balances, anything like that. So we, you know, they're essentially black boxes to us even. And we did a lot with that on like our front end dashboard too, to make that a really seamless integration to where our dashboard kind of communicates both with our APIs to create your node, do all of those things, but then it's also talking directly to your node when it's initializing it, unlocking it, all of these things. So we never see your password. We don't know what your password is to your node. We can't unlock it. We can't do any of those things. So really, we took a very, very security first way of running these nodes for exactly what you said. The other thing that you mentioned was like IP whitelisting for the APIs and whatnot. We've added that in for, you know, you don't really want your LND APIs exposed to the internet, even with the credentials that are on them. Still not a great idea. So, you know, we have IP whitelisting so you can control who accesses them, all of those things. So We wanted to make this a very scalable and very easy to use platform, but also not really. We wanted to keep the security, you know, as hard as possible.
Well, that makes, you know, that's a wonderful thing to have as a user. But then from your standpoint, you still got to support it. And every time you encrypt something or make it invisible to yourself, it makes it harder to support. Has that been, I know you can manage channels and that kind of thing, or at least have some visibility into some channels, even if you can't see the node itself. Have you worked around that sort of support nightmare versus privacy
trail? Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're exactly right that it, I think it comes with a support burden to where, you know, if we had access to everything, we could manage everything, that would be really easy. And so there's a trade off there, but, that's something that we kind of consciously took on because I think the security is more important than our, support burden. And so, you know, we do a lot to really try, I guess we're kind of clever with how we do it. So like when things like we have like an integration with Breeze, for example, where they, you know, if you buy a podcasting node, you get a channel open to you from Breeze. So you can start, you know, getting that inbound capacity for people to stream to you instantly. That is really done on the in our dashboard. And it is, your node has to peer with Breeze before they can open the channel. And that's all done from the dashboard. So it seems like it's kind of this automated thing, but it's really you making the request client side to do all this stuff, but we just make it really, really simple and abstracted away to where, you know, we aren't doing anything with your node. We're just making it easier for you to do it yourself, I guess.
Okay. All right. So that sort of happens post unlock and then those kinds of things.
Yes. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you talked about, you mentioned a second ago about your API, and I think, I mean, y'all have just recently released an API, and that's part of what I want to ask you about for us. I mean, we run our node on your on Voltage. Like, what can your API, now that it's public, what can we do with that? Like, how does that help us? I've got some ideas of stuff I want to do, but like, what do you think that helps us do?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps with the management of it. So through the API, you can obviously create new nodes, but you can also, for your existing nodes, you can stop and start them or update them. So, you know, we have webhooks on the platform too. You know, we could send you an update or a webhook that says, hey, your node has an update. You could probably should evaluate, you know, the version updates and whatnot. And then you could automate the update process of just hitting the API. We also have like ways you can use the APIs to get logs from your node, get like the macros to connect, all of these things. So you can really kind of, it allows you to integrate the Voltage platform more into like your apps or whatever you have. If you have some management dashboards for podcasts, you know, your podcasting setups and whatnot, you could basically control your node from that, from your own dashboards via our API.
Okay. What about backups? Can you do those like channel backups through the API?
Yeah. I mean, so channel backups are created automatically. That's something we just do for you, just on the platform in general, but you can use the API to like, download them or, you know, take them off of, back them up on your own storage too. So, yes, you can use the API to, you know, create exports like that.
Mm. So one thing I want to ask you about is, a lot of podcasters who are doing value for value who listen to our show, and a lot of them are running their own nodes, and whether you're on Voltage or running your own node, one thing I've been wanting to pick your brain about for a while is just, good node management
hygiene.
Yeah. What are your recommendations for a way that if somebody's running their own node, whether it's on your own Voltage or their other or themselves, what are your advice for how to make sure that they're running it safely and keeping things backed up, keeping their, you know, channels? Do you have any just general advice on how to run a node in a good way for somebody like a podcaster who may be getting sort of constant streaming payments?
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, that's a great question. And so as far as like, you know, the safety goes, I mean, definitely keeping backups of your channels with that channel backup file, like we mentioned, is very important. I'm not, honestly, I haven't used an Umbral before, so I'm not sure if that like automates it or how that works, but keeping copies of that is very important. On our platform, I know for sure that we do automatic backups, and we, you know, we do replication of those across the world to make sure that those are safe. So that's a very important piece, just for sake of just fund recovery. If your node's database gets corrupted or something, just literally getting your money out of it. That's going to be very important. Another thing that when you're running, it's more of an issue with larger scale nodes like you guys or someone than like maybe the smaller nodes. But the LND by default uses a database called Bbolt, which is it's kind of like an embedded database. So it's not really made for large scale. And if you're, you know, well, and like this is the thing with podcasting 2.0, like your value for value is there's a lot of little payments. So it's a lot of invoices in your database. So it can grow pretty large over time. And it's not really optimized to be handled in a, you know, really large way. So the best way to work with that is to LND has APIs to export all of your invoices, payments, transactions, all of those things out of the database. And I always recommend to store those somewhere else, whether it's just CSVs or whatever, just outside of your node. And then LND has some new APIs that allow you to delete those out of the node. Which is, it's going to be very important for one, for like to export that data out in case anything happens, you still have that data, but then it also keeps your node fast and able to do, you know, transactions really quickly. But the other important piece of it is once you delete all of those payments, it's just kind of one of the intricacies of Bbolt, but you have to do a compaction on the database to like actually remove the value, like the records from it. Again, right. Not sure how that works on Umbral, but on ours, we have like an auto compaction feature that you could turn on to compact your database to make sure that those are wiped.
None of that sounded sexy. Okay. That was all really, really scary. I mean, I don't like any of it.
That's one of the challenges for us and everyone is how do we make this sexy? You know, this is all low level technical stuff, right? And how do we make it more sexy?
With Boostergrams, we're working on something. That's how you make it sexy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Boostergrams. right.
That's the way to go.
Yeah. No, but the other thing you mentioned, Dave, was the channels. And obviously, if you're a podcaster and you're needing to receive payments from your listeners, you got to have inbound capacity. So that's something to always kind of keep an eye on. I'm not saying that you need 100 channels open to you. You just need one or two or maybe three that have enough capacity on the opposite side to receive those payments. So that's just something to keep an eye on. And, we're working on some products to make the channel creation easier and being able to, get that amount capacity easier than it exists today. So there's a few things that will be out soonish that will help with that. Then that's just something to always keep in mind is, you know, you can't, as a podcaster, you can't be receiving payments if you don't have capacity in the Lightning Network to receive them, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. We've tried to, as people come online, as podcasters come online with their own nodes, we've tried, you know, to open up channels to them to give them some initial inbound liquidity and that kind of thing. And that's going, you know, it's worked well so far and we're happy to do it. One problem we do end up with lots and lots of channels. I mean, I think
small ones too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got like 112 channels.
Yeah. Now. I was thinking we need to set an inbound limit on, cause you know, when you get the 50,000 sat channel, it's not, you know, doesn't help.
Right. So is that what you guys do right now? Is, you know, you're just kind of helpful and offering people open channels.
Yeah. So we'll open channels typically 200 sats, 250, sometimes a million. You know, we've got a 5 million channel to LN Pay. We have, you know, I have a channel to Voltage, which has been stuck for 18 months.
Oh.
What?
If only we knew somebody at Vultures that could.
You should have told me about that. We'll look at that. I'm not familiar with that, but we could definitely look into what's going on.
I'll send you the transaction ID. And you know, we try to set zero base fee on new channels just to help stuff move through. So we're a little bit of a routing node. It's interesting. We get the most routing sats from Podfriend. you know, however the network has determined that this is the way it's supposed to go. We're just trying to be a kind of a good steward mothership in the middle. And I think it's effective, you know, particularly for new people who just they have no inbound liquidity, don't understand really what they're doing. So we'll just hand it to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I that makes sense. And I think that's really good for the time where we're at of this kind of we're still in the early days, right? And figuring out how this is all going to work. But
we're totally the bastard stepchild when it comes to people developing for the Lightning Network, because, you know, our routing, our liquidity, it's low, but we have a very high volume of transactions. So, you know, no one's really thinking about all these optimizations that we need because of that volume. But if we're all successful, eventually we will need them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, completely. I think that's something we should talk about after this is I think we have some things coming out that will help you and then also help a lot of these new podcasters coming online and how they're going to manage that inbound liquidity. So don't have anything that I can say on the show yet, but I mean, I think we'll have some solutions soon that will really help this onboarding process where it's not Adam and Dave opening up every single podcast channel out there.
Yeah, hey, and that's in the spec, right?
Yeah.
have you considered like real consumer market where, you know, you have a family node and maybe I know you and I, we've talked about Ellen Bits or, you know, or some other kind of what we call it, Uncle Joe's node, you know, so people can share with a simple wallet that they can hook up to, you know, Blue Wallet or something, or maybe Zap, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's something we're looking into primarily from, like we talked about with like Ellen Bits, because for those that aren't familiar, Ellen Bits is an application that connects to your node that you can do some of that abstraction away.
I like Ellen Bits. I think it's cool. I love the little modules, and I've never been able to successfully get my a certificate properly installed on my Raspi Blitz. But otherwise the LN URL stuff works. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a good application, and that's something that we're looking into bringing onto the platform. So, you know, things like that will be possible soon. Once we kind of get that on there, and then, you know, you can create wallets for family members, friends, whatever it is.
What other markets are you going into? What other markets are you looking at for Lightning services?
Yeah, I mean, I think that so there's as far as we're just trying to offer services for kind of everyone, right? And that's intentionally broad because we're so early that there's a lot of people that need help. But there's with what's going on in El Salvador and all of these new things where, you know, it's becoming more everyday use. We're seeing a lot of inbound from people like banks and more traditional institutions that you know, maybe previously we're writing it off or saying we'll look at it next year. And now it's like, people are using this every day in El Salvador. Like, this is, you know, we're going to need to start looking at this sooner than next year.
So do you think retail, point of sale, that kind of stuff?
I mean, potentially. I think it's that could be. I see it more maybe in the financial institutions where it's like, stuff like that. I think we'll definitely come online soon. But I mean, like Breeze's, you know, point of sale and things like that, I think it's been gaining adoption as well. So I think we could see it kind of across the board almost.
What about legislation, this kind of stuff? I'm sure you follow it. How closely do you care? Does it matter to your business?
Yeah, I mean, it does matter to us. And it's something that I do try and follow. And it's something that it's changing quickly, and so it is kind of difficult to figure out what's what and how is this going to work out. Luckily, I think a lot of these things have a little bit of lead time on them before they actually go into effect. So I think to date, there's been a few things happen this year that weren't, you know, quite friendly to what we're doing. But I think it comes down to education. I mean, there's some people in politics that don't really care to be educated. But I think it does. I think there's a good amount of people out there that if we can just get the education right and really convey what is truly happening, and this isn't just some, you know, Bitcoin's not some scheme that's going to rob everyone of their wealth or something like that. I think that'll go a long way.
Yeah. I was listening to, again, on Mere Mortals, they were talking about, doing some Bitcoin meetups down in, in Australia, in Brisbane, and they were just kind of commenting on how they all, nobody that they met in the Bitcoin meetups down there, nobody seemed to care or mention what the price of Bitcoin was, like denominated in fiat. Everybody, they were just sort of like, well, you know, they don't, it's sort of like they don't care what the price is.
No.
And that was really, that was really interesting, because if you think about it, I mean, it makes sense. I know most Bitcoin people are in, they, at this point, they're, of course, you're going to have your tech bros and your scammy investor guys, but the, you know, really, so many of the people that, that we have met and know of are in it for a bit, a much bigger, they're in it for ideology, not for, you know, in getting rich or whatever.
We all win if we all work together.
Yeah. And you look at, Gigi tweeted something yesterday and he said, when your money, when money is broken, everything becomes money. And that was so, it's such a profound thing to say, because he's exactly right. And we're seeing it right now. We're seeing it where all of a sudden all these asset classes are in bubbles. You know, houses are now money, cars are money, you know, tech is money. I mean, everything is become is being priced. All of our assets are now being priced in terms of their monetary value, because the money itself has been is broken. You know, it's like we, I mean, we have, I saw yesterday that 20% of the total U.S. dollars in circulation today.
Yes, from the past 2 years.
Exactly. We're in 2020. Yeah. In 2020 alone is 20% of the total U.S. dollar volume.
But Dave, that's immunized money. It doesn't, it doesn't add to it. It's transitory. Stop.
Right.
MMT. MMT.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, I mean, I completely agree. And I think that that's where, I think that, you know, learning Bitcoin and all of these things is a journey. And I think that, you know, that's where I see more and more people coming to, is I think there's a stage in your journey where you realize that, like, the fiat dollar value of this stuff doesn't quite matter as much as you previously thought.
Which is, what is the, some of the most surprising, customers you have, business wise?
I mean, we, so I think that the ones, so I mean, I that's what I like what we're doing, is because we have a very wide range of customers, whether it's like podcasting, gaming, there's some financial institutions, and then there's things like Sphinx Chat, that's like, you know, messaging. So the use case is very, very broad for the Lightning Network, which is why, I mean, one of the reasons I find it so interesting, this can really be applied to anything. So I think that, we have a lot of really interesting use cases, primarily like some of the ones that I find most interesting are like gaming, podcasting, those things. And then we also have just like the financial services, which is, you know, maybe more, not very weird. I think that's probably more of the predictable ones, but, you know, we're having conversations with people that you wouldn't expect, I guess. Even I'm kind of blown away by the inbound we get of like, oh, I would never expect you to be looking at Lightning right now, but you are. So I think that's the big surprising thing, is the amount of traditional services that are starting to look into this space,
like a grocery store or something. I mean, like just
Or like just kind of like
retail.
Or like just bigger banks where you're like, you know, they're so big that, well, why would they look into, you know, something like this? Or, you know, just, these auxiliary services that you would just never quite expect to be, you know, for us, it makes sense, you know, for them to be on Lightning. But I think that there's still a part of me that's like, I think that there's, I'm surprised that they're as far along in their journey as they are.
Are y'all global? Do you have customers like in El Salvador and in all parts of the world?
Yeah, we do. We are global, and we do have customers in, you know, some Central American countries, some in Europe and whatnot. So we definitely are global, and we're working on rolling out the platform in a more global way where you can, we have zones all over the world, but making all of those zones publicly available, things like that. So we're working on making the platform more global as well, but we do have customers that are outside the US.
Okay. My partner Dave had a big ask for you.
Oh yeah.
What was the ask?
Some feature you wanted.
Oh, you're talking about the... Oh, okay. No, well, it wasn't a feature. You're talking about what we were talking about a while ago. That wasn't a feature. That was where I just wanted to roll this out to you and see what you think about it. So this is... there's subscriptions in pod... You know, what we're doing pay, you know, essentially play to pay. And value for value. But you could do this in a subscription format where with a paywall type deal. And so here's... I mean, you're familiar enough with podcasting to give your input on this. So the idea here is you have a podcasting host, and the podcasting host is serving up the RSS feeds. The way it works now is if I want to subscribe, and you can see this through, who is it? What's the name of that? Substack. Okay. So Substack has, a guy on there who wants to give out a private feed for his members. Well, they produce a private, produce a separate RSS feed with either a token or like HTTP basic, authentication or something like that. And that's the URL that you take and manually copy it and paste it into your podcast player. The problem there is you can share that and anybody can use it because it's just tokenized. And then, and it can get sucked into directories and it's also a pain in the butt. But then you got the alternate model, which is Apple or Spotify, whoever, who's going to have like this private, podcasting service, subscription service where there is no feed. I mean, it's all just, built into their proprietary system. So I was thinking what you could do is you could have just your single feed. So I've got, let's just say this podcast, Podcasting 2.0, RSS feed. Mm-hmm. And, I want to make it, some of the content in the feed paywall. So as the podcast host for the feed could, generate a key, pay or a seed value. When you say, I want to subscribe. So you click, say, I want to subscribe to this content. It generate, and your podcast player generates a seed, sends it through the processing system on the hosting platform. So in somewhere in the feed, there would say, be like an API endpoint or something that you could communicate to do this subscription with, generate a seed value, send it to the host. The hosting company records it, and that's going to be your time-based one-time password seed. So now the podcast app knows the time-based one-time password, and the podcast host knows the seed value for that to calculate the TOTP. Now every time you go to refresh and pull a new copy of the feed, you generate the one-time password, send it back to the host. And then the host authenticates, and that's how they serve you the enclosure. So when I go to request the enclosure to listen to this episode that says it's protected, I'm sending the TOTP as a URL parameter back with it. And the host now knows, okay, this is a valid subscription because we've done this prior transaction before, and we've both shared the seed value. And so now I know that I can serve this enclosure to this particular podcast player because they know the seed.
Go ahead.
No. And so then if you were to move your feed subscriptions from one podcast player to another, from like one app to another, you could export them out in OPML. And an extra OPML attribute could be in there
That's cool.
With the TOTP seed.
Wow.
And you pick up all your subscriptions can move with you from app to app.
Right. I think that if I'm understanding right, it would be like a spec level change where all of the podcasting apps would have to support this TOTP seed.
They will do whatever we tell them.
Command you to add that into your app.
That's a perfect
use of that. Yeah, that's perfect use of that.
What do you think? I mean, like that would work. You just have like that takes it. That takes where you could have where I could say, okay, I'm gonna pay I don't know, 25,000 sats as to subscribe to this show. And as long as your app is paying the subscription, you continue, like whenever you, if you ever stop paying the subscription, your OTP seed just get wiped.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. And I think I'd have to like see it more on paper to figure out if like that literally that scheme works. But I think generally speaking, that makes a lot of sense to be able to, like, you know, pay an invoice and get like this seed that allows you to, you know, get access to the content. I think that makes a lot of sense. And so this would be an addition to like the value for value of like this kind of like the private premium content where you pay to unlock it kind of thing.
Yeah, there's some people that are just like they're too scared of non-stable income, and they want like this predict, not that subscriptions are stable. I mean, they're just as unstable as everything else, but they like this sort of warm fuzzies of saying I know that I'm going to get my money up front, and this is going to be how I'm going to do it.
Once they learn that they're short selling themselves, they move over to value for value. But it's a good way to onboard and to compete with Patreon.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then if you subscribe with this mechanism, then you could even say when they generate the invoice to make the payment, you could even use the invoice hash itself as sort of the seed value for the OTP.
Yeah. Well, so have you heard of LSAT?
Oh yeah. We looked at LSAT years ago.
Yeah, but I've never fully understood how to make it work.
I kind of haven't either, honestly. Like, I haven't gotten into like the nitty gritty details of like implementing.
That makes me feel better, by the way.
But I mean, there's way too much to learn. Even for me, there's just too much.
But the idea is it's an API that you can pay for on the fly, correct?
Yeah. And it's like, essentially your payment is that unlock mechanism. Yeah. It's like the payment is the API key.
Yeah.
So it's like, it gives you, you know, this, it's almost like a token that, is a payment that you can use to unlock the content behind the API. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that your idea is right. And, you know, I think the lower level implementations, whether it's like an LSAT or just some other, token thing, makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that's a great idea.
That's exactly what I was wanting to hear you say. That's why.
I think that's something that I talk with Tim at LMPay quite a bit about, is just kind of the subscription piece, just generally speaking, on Lightning and just Bitcoin in general as well. People say there's like things in Bolt 12 that kind of make it happen, which is, for those that aren't familiar, it's just a spec to the Lightning network of like the protocol. And I mean, you know, maybe there's some things in there that we could leverage, but who knows when that's going to really be out and all of these things. So I think that it's important to, you know, we don't want to just wait for everything to be rolled out. So I think that it's important to figure out how this fits in today.
Do you think LND will adopt Bolt 12? Cause they seem a little on the fence about it.
That's a great question. That's like $1 million question right there. I think that they will. I think that if it's like, if everything gets approved, like kind of through the normal processes, and it's like an official, released Bolt that, especially if they have a lot of users requesting it, I think that they will. I think it's a matter of time, but, you know, assuming, depending on how things play out, I think they will.
And did I hear, Dave, were you telling me that the boostergrams were coming to Thunderhub?
That's what I'd heard. And I think Roy mentioned that. Are y'all doing anything with boostergrams or anything on y'all's radar?
No. Okay. I'm not even super familiar with boostergrams, so you guys are going to have to give me like an on-air lesson about that.
Okay, so an added feature in the podcast apps, you know, the boost where you can, you know, like a super chat, you can send 1,000 Satoshis or any number you want in one go. So we've added a messaging to that, for which we've defined a TLV record.
TLV 7629169.
002-345-789. That's my number. So the message carries along with it. And the net effect, the way I receive them, is that Dave has it rigged up so that it comes in on email. And it, so it tells me, you know, what the alias of the person who's sending it, the amount, the podcast they were listening to, which episode, and the message.
Timestamp.
Yep. It's revolutionizing podcasting. This feedback loop has never been there before.
Yeah.
And it fits right along. It's kind of like a PayPal message, only a million times better.
Right. No, that's awesome. Dave, how did you implement that? Do you like listen to like the Node's like APIs and, you know, detect the TLV and do all that stuff?
Yeah. Originally I was pulling everything myself with some scripts, and then John Chidji wrote a Python script that will do it through that'll monitor it and push it out through as push notifications through pushover, but I've just now switched this last week. Alex Gates wrote a Python script that uses the create, I think it's create invoice stream API, the gRPC stream API from LND. So now you can get them in real time. So essentially it just opens a channel, it opens a stream, and then they just pop in his script, like literally within 2 seconds after sending a boostogram, it pops into the stream and his script outputs it to standard out. And so I'm just capturing that standard out in another script and triggering, you know, push notifications and that what that will become. And it's almost working. I've almost got it working today. Is that will become the super chat for live. Like you'll be able to go to a web page and see, I mean, be listening to the show live and then seeing the boostograms come in and scroll through the screen. So it'll be like a YouTube super chat.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's awesome. That's super powerful.
It'd be so cool. So this is a value for value project, which means that there's no creepy corporate money. There's no ads. Mm-hmm. That's the only way it's going to work. It's the only way everybody stays honest. And you just heard a couple names there of people who are putting a lot of time and talent into moving podcasting even further. And we really love to thank our producers who are supporting us with their cuck bucks, which you can go do at podcastindex.org. Down at the bottom, the red donate button, that is PayPal. And then of course we have the boost, system, the boost ecosystem and some boostograms. And, where do you want to start, Dave?
You got time to hang around while we do some boostograms, Graham?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, we've got some, the only cut bucks we have this week, other than monthly donors, we got a single from, from Gregory Van Mullum, sent us $400.
Whoa.
Through PayPal.
I
emailed with him a little bit and he said that he's going to get more involved. He's a coder, and so he's going to start helping with some code too. But he said this is my first contribution. So
wow, thank you very much. I think we should call him Defragmented.
Oh yes,
you've been defragmented
for sure. Thank you, man. That's great.
Yeah, he's
that's almost our really entire nice server budget. Or used to be.
I got the bill today. I can tell you what it was.
What was it?
And then Graham is going to laugh at this hosting fee. It was $467.
Wow, man. And that's 20 servers?
Yes, that is 20 servers.
Well done, Master Dave.
That is a chicken feed compared to Graham's hosting fees.
Yeah. Well, but he probably still has a deal with AWS. He's got a backdoor deal with his old buddies there. Were you at AWS, weren't you?
I never worked there. I've worked, you know, with it through.
Oh, a lot of companies, I thought you worked there. Oh, okay.
No. Okay. Let's see. Oh, okay. So I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm a huge fan of this competition that we've created.
What competition?
Okay. Aerostatica sent 250,000 sats.
What?
as a boostergram.
Hold on a second.
Impala, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Baller boost.
Total baller boost. And it came through Fountain app. And he says, hey, Dreb, boostergram max challenge accepted. $250,000 baller boost. Can I get a t-shirt? Also, he said, also, I got boostergrams.com. I need ideas.
Ooh.
See, I 100% approve of this competition to see who can send us the most sets.
I was wondering why our channels were flipping back and forth the whole time with LNP. Yeah. I'm like, wow, what went through there?
thank you, Aristatica. Aristatica, the inventor of the term boostergram.
That's right. And he's got the domain name to prove it. And it's written in the show notes. We've codified that.
He's got papers.
Yes.
Let's see. Auburn Citadel sent us 49,000 sats, and he says, Auburn Citadel checking in on the board meeting.
Yes.
This boost brings me well over 200,000 sats. I'll be hitting you up for a t-shirt soon. Hopefully no supply chain issues. Oh, I hope so.
No, we don't want it. Don't need that.
Yeah, we don't want t-shirt supply chain issues.
No, definitely
thank
not.
You. Thank you, Auburn Citadel. Appreciate that. Okay. Now, this is a string of boostergrams from Kyron. I'm sorry. No, we start out with Daniel. I'm sorry. Yeah, Daniel says he went through Breeze and he sent us 50,000 sats.
Whew.
It's baller boost day.
It is. You guys are great.
This says to Bill Prague, boosts are on Lightning Network. There's no block delay at all. Daniel. Okay. I also fully approve of this too, which is people correcting other people through boostergrams. I like this.
This is very, 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 very good trend.
Yes. Yes. I like this. Okay. Now Kyron sent us, see, he sent us a string of boostergrams, and
I dropped it on the floor.
Uh-oh.
Oh, here it is. Okay. So that's three. That's three of four. Four of four. I'm out of order here. Okay, I'm just going to read them in whatever order they come up. He says 25,000 sats through the Fountain app, and he says, any update on the new website? I've noticed the apps page is a tad out of date.
Ooh,
well, I updated it a couple of days ago.
Yeah. Devs, make sure that you have your app features updated on the apps page. That's what we're promoting. Newpodcastapps.com. So you want all your features represented. You can just do it with a pull request.
And he says, Fountain, for example, now has chapters, and I'm keen to see how you're going to display the 959 things that 2.0 is. And yeah, that's been updated. So that pull request I just had to put in production. So Fountain's up to date now.
Okay.
The new website, still working on it. Websites are hard.
Yeah, we'll probably be a lot of focus on the podcaster wallet stuff, right? Once you get to it, or you're getting pretty close, I think.
I've got API stuff to fix, and then we'll go into that. Here's four out of four. He says, a le boost to end off my top end boostergram shopping spree, my good sirs, Kyron. Le boost.
And now, as the French say, it is time for le boost.
Don't you wish you had a podcastgram so that people could just randomly send you sats with messages in them?
Yeah, I know. I do. I'm getting jealous over here.
Well, you know, I'm just get boring emails with no sats in them.
Yeah.
We'll be happy to discuss with you just putting you into our value splits for 5% so we don't have to pay any fees. You just take a cut like everybody else. Get rich.
Yeah. Maybe we could do that. Maybe.
Telling you, man, it's the future.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Aristatica sent us 2,376 sats. He says, I have a request. Is there any possibility that I could be the first person to do a boostergram in a new live super chat? Fine by me.
Is it just first come, first serve, isn't it?
I'll give him a little heads up, I guess.
How close are we to doing that? Because I've missed the dev meeting. I don't know. I don't know if Brian put it up yet.
I haven't seen him post it yet, but I mean, we're not far. I mean, the only thing we have to do is just bake in some tag. We got, somebody's got to bake in the tag support. And then we have to put in the action parameter in PodPing so that we can trigger. So what we're talking about, Graham, is we're as part of the podcasting namespace, we're going to have a tag in there called called live item. And it's just, it'll just be, it's meant to just reference a stream, like a live stream, HTTP stream. And so then you put in a live item in the RSS feed. And when apps see that, there will be in the item, there will be a start time on it that says, you know, like whatever, you know, this is the time that this stream is going to go live. But then, and then we will send out a push notification through the PodPing system, which uses the Hive blockchain. When the actual stream then goes live.
The golf ball falls down the domino steps.
And the chicken squawks and lays an egg.
Exactly. Into the spoon. The spoon flips over. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it pours out a pitcher of water and the stove turns on. Yeah, exactly. But the it sends out that thing. Then the app knows, okay, hit the live stream now. And then that's when you can tune into the live stream. Then the super chat starts. And the boostergrams start flowing. See, okay. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, sure.
I got the chicken egg part of it, at least.
okay, so let's see. Aristatic has sent us another 2,376 S, and he just says boostergram.
All right.
That's what that was. It was
Boostergram. But we're going to be the first show to do the live, right? We got to do that right here, man. Friday afternoon will be fun.
Oh yeah, we bake this stuff in house. We
eat our own dinner. Dog food. Hey, by the way, Stephen B. still my man, number one. Yep. My workflow has been significantly shortened in time. Ease of use, top notch, brother, top notch. The RSS Graham, generator in CurioCaster. I'm sorry.
We need Graham's. Mm. No, we need Graham's node so we can put it into our split.
Oh yeah. Dude, can you put that on the signal? So we'll give you a guest split. So in perpetuity, you'll receive sats whenever someone listens to this episode.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, free money.
Yeah.
All right.
See, Anonymous through Breeze. It says, listening to 1,776 sats. Obviously, good numerology.
Beautiful. I love that.
1776. Mm-hmm. Says, listening to you makes me happy and hopeful. Glad we're standing shoulder to shoulder for liberty. Oh, that's a good. You bet. That's a good note.
You bet.
Yeah. That's a good one.
We do have some. We did get some hate boosts.
Oh no, hate boost.
Yeah, we got two hate boosts. Hold on.
Let's just
targeted stop. At you. By the way,
let's just stop for a second and recognize the beauty of this situation. People are sending money to send their hate. This is a great system. All right. All right, what did I do wrong? Why am I being hated?
Okay, so Anonymous through Breeze sent 3,333 sats.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you're the cringe one, Curry, looking down your nose at tips. Grow the fuck up.
Bombshell. Looking down my nose at tips.
And another one, Anonymous, 3,333 sats.
Sounds like the same person.
He says, through Breeze again, some of us work for tips by choice and make great money doing it. Get over yourself.
Ooh. Instagram. Ooh. Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I mean, like, this guy's really angry. Not sure why, but he paid us 6,666 sats.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the dead. There is it. Thank you for that. I recognize your boostergram amount.
Okay.
Beelzebub is taking over.
Bill Prague sent us 500 sats, and he says, you were talking about live shows and live donations with comments and how would they work with boosts. So I was just throwing ideas out there. Oh, he's responding to something we said.
Right.
He says, can I get a Hive power? I don't know if we have a Hive power.
We don't have a Hive power. Okay. Well, hold on. Maybe I can do this. Let me see. I didn't have that set up.
Well, that's Beelzebub voice, right? Hive power.
Hive power!
Nice. Okay, there you go. There's your hive power.
I do want to start a podcast just for the fun you guys are having with the voices. And
oh, it gets old. This always happens with new gear. Believe me, it gets old. After a while, I'll be like, stop with the devil voice, Curry. You know, and stop looking down your nose at tips.
Yeah. Yeah, grow the fuck up.
Okay. Bill finishes off by saying, go podcasting, especially the 2.0 one.
Go podcasting!
What we got here? Okay, 1,333 sats, and he's this is from Harv Hat through CurioCaster, and he says, pal of the pod. Oh, that's pod pal. Okay. It's
pal of the pod.
Paul Saltzman gave us 1,220 sats, and he says, adding to my monthly cutbuck support because I love playing with all this stuff.
Oh, man. Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that.
And the last boostergram is 100 sats from Anonymous on Breeze, and he just says, nice job, boys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And then our monthlies.
Yeah, we got some monthlies here. We got
this is really sustaining. Thank you so much. I can see a lot of people are transitioning from PayPal to the boostergrams. Really encouraging. These sustaining ongoing subscriptions are very much appreciated.
Yeah, every one of these represents servers that we don't have to pay for, and it's fantastic. Droid Works gave us $20. Jeff Miller gave us $20. Let's see, Dreb Scott gave us $15. Thank you, Dreb.
Thanks, Dreb.
Scott Jalbert gave us $12. Aaron Reno, $5. Pedro Goncalves, $5. Michael Kimmerer, $5.33. Terry Keller gave us $4.11. And Leslie Martin gave us $2. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. That's our group.
Very, very much appreciated. Value for value. Bring it with your time, your talent, your treasure. We still accept cuck bucks, but we do prefer the boostergrams anytime you feel like it.
Boost!
Bring it on with a podcast app, a new one. Try one today. Newpodcastapps.com. Graham, what are some of the just most interesting uses of lightning that you've been exposed to? Because I'm sure, you know, we're pretty hyper focused on stuff. What are the things that you think are interesting just from maybe a technological perspective or maybe use case?
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys are definitely on the, I think, the front runners.
Oh, yes, it worked. Fishing for compliments.
That is the subtitle of the show.
Yeah. No, I mean, but seriously, like, it's always like my go-to example of what is possible with lightning, and it's really just the value for value concept, whether it's podcasting or video, whatever it is, the value for value concept, I think, is very, very powerful and is a great example of what's possible with lightning. And just being able to send money to anyone in the world peer to peer, directly, especially inside of these applications, I think is just, I think that is just absolutely fascinating, and I love what you guys have built out, as just being kind of the front runners in that. I always go to podcasting and value for value in my examples. I think you guys are one of the most interesting use cases. Same with like Sphinx and all of these things, which is kind of like it still goes down almost to that value for value, thing. Mm-hmm. At the base of it.
I've seen that Impervious.ai. They're doing some crazy experiments. Have you seen their stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. The Impervious is a very, very interesting project, and I like what a lot of the things that are being developed on it. Like they did a hackathon, and
what is this?
It's called Impervious.ai is their website, and it's a it's almost like a layer 3 technology where it's a software that you can use to incorporate lightning into applications. So they had a hackathon here recently, and people created like a VoIP service where you would make phone calls and pay per minute or whatever. Mm-hmm. With lightning, things like that. So it makes I think it's honestly like a tool to bring value for value into these auxiliary different uses outside of things like podcasting.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I'm not sure. Some of this stuff seems kind of limited because you end up having, if you're going to run a VPN over Lightning payloads, I mean, that sounds a little sort of walking a tightrope. But
yeah, yes, and I think some of it is they're like for that example, I think that the spec of it is that the VPN connection is not using the Lightning network natively. It's still like a separate application that's still peer to peer, but it ties in with the Lightning Network to where you're paying per minute, but the literally the packets on the VPN aren't traveling in like TLV records.
Oh, okay, so I guess that confused me because I know they did that thing where they split up the MP split up an MP3 into all these separate parts and sent it as an amp payment and reassembled it and played it back on the other side.
yeah, and I think that. Yeah, I think that's maybe pushing it a little bit on what we should be using this for. But I mean, I think that the way that you guys are, you know, doing like I think like incorporating boosts and all of these things and you know in the payloads is you know makes perfect sense of you know tying the payment to something.
So they're really billing themselves as layer three. That's interesting.
Yes.
Circumventing digital intermediaries and establishing P2P data transmissions is a panacea for consumer privacy, data security, censorship resistance, and countering surveillance.
Whoa. They need to hire you.
Yes,
I need an exit strategy. I need to get out of this podcasting gig, man. It's killing me.
Yeah, I missed the voice.
Oh, man. This is, you know, it's... It's a pretty nerdy episode, this.
It was, yes. Mm-hmm.
Very nerdy, but I know that a lot of people are so interested in just, you know, the whole, how does it work? What's it doing? Where's it going? And you're really leading a lot of that, Graham. It's really phenomenal. You're a great asset to all of this.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that. And I think that it is, I mean, it's I'm a nerd at heart. It's hard for me not to get nerdy on a lot of this stuff, especially when we're talking about Lightning Network. But... just, you know, for anyone out there listening that's interested in this, I mean, hit us up and we have like a good support team that understands a lot of this, even from, you know, not so technical. So you need any help at all. Like, you know, our team is certainly willing to help explain things or, you know, get you onboarded, however you want to do that. I apologize for being maybe a little too nerdy on the episode, but
I blame that on Dave.
Yeah. I'll take it. Bring it.
No, but I mean, like, so there's a lot here, and it is hard to grasp. But I mean, there's, I think just getting your toes wet one step at a time is the way to do it. You know, us as a service is happy to help you at, you know, whatever stage of the journey you're in.
Oh, I like that. To see that you didn't mean it this way, but us as a service, that's a great name for a product. Us, you know, UAAS. Yeah, that's what me and Adam are. We're us as a service. We're
totally us as a service. David, anything else we need to discuss before we close up the meeting?
No, I think this was sort of a Bitcoin-y, techie type episode. We'll be back to more podcast focused episode next week. We're having Brian of London on.
Oh my goodness, that's you know what's going to happen. He's going to bring the Hive power.
Oh, yeah. Now he's got the jingle to prove it.
Graham, man, thank you so much for everything you're doing. And thanks for joining us here at the board meeting for today.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, guys. Thanks to both of you. I mean, you guys are, like I said, the front runners and pushing Lightning and all this stuff, which I got to commend you both. I don't think we've had time to talk about your guys' Bitcoin journey or anything like that. But I think for you guys to come from, you know, your experience and what you're doing and seeing Bitcoin as a solution to a lot of these things is, I think that's awesome. I think like I'll riff for just a brief second, but I think that you guys could have taken this and created a podcast token and done a bunch of crazy shit with it that would have been honestly pretty bad. But I commend you for doing it the way that you're doing it and looking out for, you know, these content creators, you know, in an honest and sincere way. So, I mean, thank you guys.
Well, it's a pleasure. We're just having a good time, right, Dave?
Yeah. If it wasn't fun, we wouldn't be doing it. I can promise you that.
They're like, all right, kids, go figure out the podcasting yourself. Damn it. We're not having any fun. All right. Yeah. Everybody else here in the boardroom, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back next Friday with another edition of the Board Meeting for Podcasting 2.0. Until then, take it easy. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Boost to Graham.
Boost!
Boost.
Go podcasting!